film and music mogul David Geffen had a Cayman Islands corporation that was owner of his $214 million yacht, and that was sold to another offshore entity that was set up by this Panamanian law firm. Today, I learned that a rather well-known Harvard University professor named Michael Porter is listed in one offshore corporation. And there are plenty of people who have criminal convictions who we've learned also have offshore corporations.
Both Johnson and Bernstein point out that this is just the tip of the iceberg, especially in the U.S., since Mossack Fonseca is one of five major firms doing this sort of work, and there are still other ways to hide money in tax havens such as the Cayman Islands and the Virgin Islands. In the end, most of these activities amount to legal behavior. It is unclear at this point if the leaks will result in legal proceedings or IRS audits, according to Johnson.
If the IRS decides to, you know, conduct an audit and determine whether the assets in these offshore corporations were declared, then they could take action against these individuals.
And in the end, the leaks expose all manner of individuals. Again, Dennis Bernstein.
Well, you've got heads of state, and you've got various politicians, but you've got drug agencies, you've got HSBC Bank, the largest drug money launderer in the world, you know, working out of the same agency as some of the traffickers that I'm sure use HSBC to launder their money. Now, that's just not hyperbole. They were busted. So it's a cross-section of criminals, politicians, and very rich people hiding their money offshore.
Please tune in for more coverage of this story as it unfolds, and go to KBOO.fm for the full interviews with Tim Johnson of McClatchy News Service and Dennis Bernstein of Flashpoints. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
Junior doctors across England are staging mass walkouts today in response to a new government contract proposal they say would create unsustainable hours and put patient safety at risk. It's the fourth such action taken this year by doctors in training in all units but emergency medical care. Philip Warwick reports from London.
Junior doctors or medical practitioners in postgraduate training make up more than half of all doctors in the UK's National Health Service, and many of them are unhappy with terms set forth by the government in its new contract proposal for public healthcare workers. 25-year-old junior doctor Melody Redman of Yorkshire says the proposed contract lacks proper safeguards for doctors working long hours.
The British Medical Association is the trade union for doctors, and it entered into negotiations with the government about a contract. But the problem is, throughout the whole negotiation process, the BMA consistently raised concerns about patient safety and about fairness for doctors. And things really came to a head over the last few months, really, where the government threatened to impose a contract on junior doctors.
Junior doctors say the government's contract is unsafe for patients because it exposes medics to even longer working hours. The contract also calls for junior doctors to work in the evenings and one weekend for no additional pay, and medics say it's unsustainable, with some doctors already leaving the UK as a result. Kitty Mohan, a London-based registrar and a member of the BMA Junior Doctors Committee, says funding cuts and increased demands on staffers are fueling burnout.
So I think that one thing that's evident is that at the current time, morale is low amongst NHS staff. People feel that they are being asked to do more with less time and less resource put at them. And that's doctors, nurses, all areas across health in the UK, and feel very pushed to deliver care that in circumstances that aren't ideal, really, due to the lack of resource and the lack of time that they can put in.
She says the decision to consider a full walkout was not taken lightly, especially given the potential for public backlash. During the strike, medics are standing down in all departments except accident and emergency units, as they have done during the previous three strikes.
It's something that actually we're having to think very, very carefully about, and if there were other options at this moment in time, we would be desperately trying to take them. The whole point of doing this and being forced into this position is so that the government will drop the imposition of the contract and come back to negotiate with us. At the moment, they're not willing to negotiate.
The NHS Performance Department press office declined interview request and refused to answer questions in writing, stating that the government's position on the issue is unchanged and has been widely covered. Nevertheless, a Department of Health spokesperson did email a statement calling the strike, quote, both desperate and irresponsible, and saying the action will inevitably put patients in harm's way. Further, the health department held the BMA responsible for the impasse, saying the doctors' groups had refused further negotiations.
So this is the cancer research lab.
34-year-old oncologist Rui Chowdhury is a clinical research fellow at King's College London, specialising in breast cancer research. She says the current workload strain is already emotionally affecting many of her colleagues.
A couple of weeks ago, one of my colleagues, we were sort of discussing about the NHS, we were sort of discussing work, but for this time round, it brought her to tears. We're quite a stoic group of individuals, but if talking about your working conditions is making you cry, that's a definite low for the profession. We usually cry when it's about our patient and the emotional aspects of the work we do, but we don't cry about the working conditions of the work that we do.
The current chief executive of NHS England, Simon Stevens, used to be an executive vice president of United Health Group, a private American healthcare company with revenue of $157 billion in 2015. As Britain's National Health Service asks more and more of its junior doctors, the system creeps closer to the exploitative US model in which medical residents regularly work as many as 80 hours per week and up to 24 hours in a row. Chowdhury sees the UK headed down the path of US-style for-profit medicine and worries not only about the current conditions for physicians in training and patient safety, she's concerned about the long-term implications for the country as well.
If you look at the States, one of the biggest problems that people have is bankruptcy. The highest level of bankruptcy come from medical fees. If you want to be able to provide people with safe care, with good care, people shouldn't have to worry about how they're going to pay for their hospital bills, how they're going to pay to see their doctor, how they're going to immunise their children, how are they going to afford antibiotics. That's not the kind of society I want to live in.
For now, the labour dispute is firmly divided, with both sides refusing to budge. The power to tip the scale may lie with the very public the healthcare is designed to benefit. Should the government's position remain unchanged, all medical units covered by junior doctors, including emergency care, plan to stage the first full walkout in the history of the National Health Service on April the 26th. Philip Warwick for FSRN, London.
In Yemen, a ceasefire between the Yemeni government and Houthi rebels is set to take place at midnight on April the 10th. This is intended to set a peaceful backdrop for the upcoming UN-facilitated peace talks, which are set to begin on April 18th in Kuwait. Saudi Arabian news agency Al Arabiya reports that there is a consensus between all parties on the terms of the ceasefire. The temporary halt to violent conflict applies immediately to the restive city of Ta'is and will expand to other embattled regions in Yemen. Meanwhile, both sides have taken to fortifying themselves in the event that peace talks fail.
Boulders of fat continue to wash up on the shores of coastal cities in the United Kingdom. The latest wave of these blobs of fat hit the cities of Sussex and Kent this week. This isn't the first time the UK has encountered the fatbergs, which are congealed masses of palm oil carried across the ocean from the Caribbean. They range in size, anything from small rocks to larger boulders, and pose huge risks to dogs in particular. They are especially attracted to the diesel-like smell of the palm oil. While the oil itself may be non-toxic, fatbergs pick up chemicals, toxins, and smaller lodged particles along the way. Back in 2014, when the first wave of palm oil fatbergs hit the coast, veterinarians in the city of Cornwall treated many poisoned dogs for consumption. Coastlines aren't the only places fatbergs are found in the UK. Several major arteries of the London sewage system have been blocked by fatbergs in recent years. Those, however, were mostly caused by the improper disposal of cooking fats.
And now, we'll hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at LaborRadio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Warehouse workers at California Cartage staged a one-day strike Wednesday protesting company retaliation for an earlier strike. More than 200 workers were told Monday they would be fired by the temporary staffing agency, AMRSSI. Cal Cartage uses that agency to staff its warehouse at the Port of Los Angeles. Stephen Hatch, a warehouse worker and member of the Warehouse Worker Resource Center, says that warehouse workers have many issues they want improved.
Low wages, working through a staffing agency for an extended number of years without ever being hired by the company. The staffing agency winds up taking probably 40% of your wages. Working conditions that are unsafe and retaliation towards the workers by management.
Hatch says that Cal Cartage is trying to intimidate workers at its warehouse from using their legal labor rights. That includes trying to instill fear into undocumented workers to keep them from uniting to improve their working conditions.
The company had its supervisors call a meeting and tell the workers that weren't a part of the Warehouse Workers Resource Center that we didn't have the right to organize and that we didn't have the right to wear our organizing t-shirts and vests and that we were going to get fired if we went on strike.
The 200 Cal Cartage workers fired by the temp agency are demanding they be rehired as direct employees. Federal labor charges have been filed. The Teamsters are supporting the warehouse workers. Here's an angry voter you can believe in. Florida Governor Rick Scott was confronted by Kara Jennings in a downtown Gainesville Starbucks.
You cut Medicaid so I couldn't get Obamacare. You're an a-hole. You don't care about working people. You don't care about working people. You should be ashamed to show your face around here.
As the Republican Florida governor's security team turned toward the woman, she made it clear that there's plenty of voter anger directed at the GOP's anti-worker policies.
You stripped women of access to public health care. Shame on you, Rich Scott. We depend on those services. Rich people like you don't know what to do. When poor people like us need health services, you cut them. Shame on you, Rich Scott. You're an embarrassment to our state.
Former Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship was sentenced Wednesday to a year in prison, $250,000 in fines, and 1 year of supervised release for conspiring to violate federal mine safety standards in the Upper Big Branch mining disaster that killed 29 miners. Blankenship drew the maximum sentence for his conviction from West Virginia Judge Irene C. Berger, the daughter of a coal miner. Blankenship's sentence is less than 2 weeks in prison for each miner killed in the explosion. WIN is made possible in part by OPEIU. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Robin Ryan, Jamie Haddad, Kanan Schlesinger, Kristen Yount, and Jeff Henderson. The producer is Sam Bowman. Special thanks to John Shuck. Our engineer is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Jamie Haddad.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it'll be Positively Revolting, featuring a variety of topics from an eco-feminist and anarcho-feminist perspective with Ani and Lynn. At 9, we'll hear Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald on privacy and surveillance. At 9:30, whistleblower Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson will speak on Israel's influence. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And at 10:15, you'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 a.m. tomorrow, Rabia Yemen will host The Digital Divide, analyzing how to use science, medicine, and technology to benefit society and keep it from harming us. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 o'clock. Next up is Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. The campaign for universal healthcare for every citizen is growing around the United States. Our local organization, Healthcare for All Oregon, has brought the movement to the stage for an outreach and fundraising mega concert featuring Vicki Stevens and the True Blue Lady Cat, Rosalind Hunters with LaRonda Steele, Terry Raw, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. KBOO will be broadcasting live from the event. Again, that's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The religion of Judaism and the political philosophy of Zionism must be completely separated. Judaism is a religion. Zionism is a political philosophy. And this confusion is well done to keep people more confused. But we're revolutionaries and we believe in dialectics. Out of confusion comes clarity.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the